Yo.
Oh, there you are.
Sorry.
Yeah, I've been sitting here listening to this fucking annoying like elevator music they've been playing.
Oh, I know you're such a patron of music.
Damn right I am. I'm a cultured individual.
You're definitely an individual, I'll give you that much. I got a like right before you
fuck that
called me.
And then you were
beeping in. It was annoying.
Yeah. It was annoying to me too.
I had a work issue.
Yeah, mine's more important.
Your issues are more important. Yeah. I agree.
Let's do this show. Let's do this.
Welcome to MMA and stuff on halfguarded.com. Hang on for a second. I waited around for you for like 2 hours last week. You had to wait like 10 extra minutes.
Did you?
Fuck that. Yeah.
What did I do last week?
You went to Hooters and had a glass of
Cabernet. Oh, that's right. That's right. Oh, yeah. Huh.
Yeah.
Ah, whatever. Yeah. I got nothing.
Yeah, because you're wrong, per usual. This past weekend, UFC on Fox. This took place in the great city of Calgary, Alberta, Canada, home to the Hart family. Bret Hart was in attendance. This was at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. Attendance was 10,603 with a gate of $1.3 million. In the main event, Dustin Poirier defeated Eddie Alvarez by TKO in the second round at 4:05. It was punches and elbows standing, I think, up against the cage. Did Alvarez go down and take shots? I can't remember. Good fight. The big controversy in this one was a stand-up in the second round. Alvarez had Poirier down up against the cage, was in mount, was landing some decent shots, but he grabbed the cage, pulled Poirier's ear, and then did a 12-6 elbow, which he was instructed by his cornerman coach, Mark Henry, to do. Clips came out of that. After the show where Henry was telling him to do this straight down elbow on top of Poirier's head. It kind of missed his head and hit his shoulder. But the ref there, Mark Goddard, I believe, stood him up, and then Poirier just landed some shots and took over and won the fight. It didn't really look to me like Poirier was going to get out of that position. Alvarez had him there for a couple minutes, but that totally changed the tide of this fight.
Yeah, it was – I don't think it probably really, like, in the end mattered, just because Poirier was moving, he was defending, and I don't think he was going to get finished. And, you know, on the feet, you know, he seemed to have something, I don't know, just beating the shit out of him. But, yeah. You know, look, don't fucking break the rules. It's real simple. Like, I know your corner, especially, like, hey, if your corner gave you bad advice – like, that's really impressive that that many people who get paid. We're not fucking around money anymore. This is a real sport. Be adults. This is a real, like, you guys are getting real money now. You're not at your gyms. You're not doing this shit. Like, this is on Big Fox. They're just signing a new $1 billion deal or whatever it is with fucking ESPN or some shit. Like, do your job. Know if you can elbow somebody in the fucking head or not. Like, that's a pretty basic one, and you all know this shit. Now, I understand that it's all fucking stupid because we should just have one set of rules, but this is – okay, I call it a sport. This isn't really a sport. There's a lot of money involved, though, right? There's, like, you're professionals. You're professional monsters.
After the fight, Poirier called out Khabib Nurmagomedov, says he wants a title fight, and is going to wait until he gets a title shot. What do you think of that strategy from Mr. Poirier?
It'll work. There's got to be bound to be one or two UFC lightweight titles floating around that he can fight for in the next year.
We're going to presume that Khabib and Conor is going to be next. So maybe do Ferguson and Poirier. But
Ferguson's
I
out,
imagine,
though, isn't he?
But he's already running around on his rebuilt AC. Yeah, he's an idiot.
Oh, no,
probably
no, he's ACL,
though. Or something.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if he wants to – he shouldn't come back to a fight that hard.
But it's also Tony Ferguson.
Yeah, I guess timing-wise it could probably work. It'd be a hell of a fight. Or maybe Kevin Lee or, you know, like it's Poirier. He's really good. He's really exciting. And I like the guy. But he doesn't feel like he's got that next level in him. Just, you know, he's able to compete. But Khabib's a fucking, my gosh. Like, look, we already saw what Conor did to him. And Conor wasn't even trying. Conor's just calling his shots at that point. He's not even in full Conor mode yet. And Khabib is just a, I don't know what he's going to do to you. He's going to hurt, like, he's going to cross a line in there one day, but nobody's going to be able to stop him. They're going to, like, try to pull him off. He's just going to, like, Andre the Giant them away as he slams your head through something.
Great fight either way. This one, I'm saying, Alvarez and Poirier. Alvarez took a beating. That guy...
he's done.
Can take a lot of shots, but I mean, he's had a long career and been in there with a lot of the best guys in the world. Like every guy he's fought in the UFC has been nasty, like top five sort of guy when he fought him. You've got Poirier, Gaethje, McGregor, RDA, Pettis, Gilbert Melendez, and Donald Cerrone.
Jeez.
The guys Alvarez has fought.
They got their fucking money's worth out of him, didn't they?
Yeah, well, that's the other thing. His contract's up now, and the idea was he didn't re-sign with the idea he wins this fight and he can get a big new deal. Do you see him sticking around, or do you see maybe going to Bellator at, what is he, 34, 35 now? 34 years old?
I'm sure it's just whoever gives him more money. Simple answer there. He's not so important that the UFC has to keep him around. But they are running more shows as always. And look, at some point, you have to spend money. You know, it's easy to say, like, oh, they could just go out there and he's not worth the money. Maybe Bellator will pay him a little bit more money. But no, like, the market is not just UFC versus Bellator. It's also UFC making sure ESPN's happy, having a new deal. And so, a guy like Alvarez, I bet he does resign. I bet he signs like a 4-fight deal or 6-fight or whatever it is. So he's still pretty damn good. And I think this show, you know, I don't think he's going to be long in the tooth, but he's got a name and he's a great fighter. And I don't know. It feels depressing for him to be in Bellator. Like everything in Bellator is depressing.
I agree. I just didn't know if it'd be easier fights for the same or more money. You know?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
He's 29-6. Legit against like the best guys in the world. You know, he's really, really good elite fighter, but at this point, I don't think he's going to get any better. It's not like he's going to improve. If anything, he's going to slow down and take more beatings. You'd be better off doing that in Bellator than UFC.
We don't know. I mean, UFC may offer him more money.
True.
And if I'm Eddie Alvarez, honestly, you just got to go out there and make as much money. It doesn't matter how tough the fight you're going to be, because the way he is in fights, it's going to probably be tough fights anyways. And yeah, look. Getting punched a little bit, like 3 or 4 more times harder than the UFC versus Bellator, that might be worth the extra 50 grand you get. You know, your kid can go to college for an extra half semester and blow her way through Madrid or something.
In the semi-main event, we had Jose Aldo defeating Jeremy Stephens by TKO. This was at 4:19 of the first round. Started off kind of slow, then they started... The fight got wild for a couple seconds there. They were both throwing like haymakers at each other. Aldo eventually landed a body shot, like a liver shot. I think it was a left to the body. Stevens went down hard, crumpled up, and Aldo just finished him with like hammer fists and punches on the ground. Afterwards, Aldo was like crying, bawling in the cage, rolling around. They had him up on his shoulders. I don't know if this is the return of Jose Aldo, the guy who was undefeated for 10 years, or he landed a good shot against, you know, a top 10 featherweight and got the win here.
Probably both. It's okay. Look, that's on some level, that is what Jose's style was. You know, he was a sharpshooter. He was the kind of guy that hit so damn hard and precise that he connected just, you know, could knock guys out with one strike all the time. Incredible knockout. I mean, the fucking the hook to the body. This is as good as anything you're gonna see. And I love seeing stuff like this when big tough guys like Jeremy Stephens, like dudes, you know, he's like, you know, he's just like 6 feet tall, 145 pounds, or like granite with meth coursing through his veins, and you just see him wince in pain, and you're just like, oh, that must really hurt when somebody like that's feeling it. You know, when the PCP boys there are just like, oh, I feel it, it hurts. You're like, oh, you poor bastard. So, yeah, Jose Aldo's a badass. Like, he's a badass dude. I thought it was kind of funny that at one point Stevens kind of rushed him and threw a bunch of punches. And Aldo did just stand and throw. Like, that little dude,
yeah.
All the people say, he's like, he can be goaded, and for a split second, he will lose his temper and say, fuck you, and punch you in the fucking mouth. Like, that's still kind of a badass thing there, and I'm happy for him. The win seemed to mean a lot to him.
Yeah, it was the sort of thing where it's like somebody finally won the world title after like years of not being able to win, or like the Red Sox winning the World Series in 04 or something, like some monumental thing, and I'm like, relax, you're in Calgary and you beat Jeremy Stevens, who has 14 losses.
Yeah, it shows the kind of pressure these guys put on themselves. He hadn't looked.
Well, it's also he probably felt, if you put yourself in Aldo's shoes, he's coming off two straight losses, bad losses against Max Holloway. The Conor McGregor fight is his most famous fight. He lost in 13 seconds, so he's lost three of his last four, and he had a decision win over Frankie Edgar. This was a big fight for him. Am I going to keep doing this? This guy hits hard. What if he hits me and I go down? And he got the win. I got it. But at the same time, it's like, you've had a lot bigger wins in your career than this.
Yeah, like that's like the thing for me. It was kind of like, I can understand a guy being extra happy. Like, you see these guys and they're just like, they're really pumped up. And you go, you know what? It's kind of show like that win, that knockout, that did mean something extra. But this was, I freed my wife and child from pedophile terrorist type of like behavior here. Like, my gosh, you think, like, I've seen lottery winners more demure than what you saw here out of Jose Aldo. So again, all the credit to him for winning. And I guess if you knock out Jeremy Stevens with a body shot in the first round of a fight, you can react any way you want. So good Fair for enough. You, Jose.
What's next for Aldo? Obviously, there's a bit of a logjam with the Holloway injury and Ortega. Do you see him getting the winner of that? They can't really put him in there with Holloway again. I guess he could fight Ortega. Maybe Holloway doesn't come back. They do an interim fight with Ortega and Aldo.
Yeah, that sounds like the kind of fight that I don't know. I'd be curious just because I don't know how big Aldo is anymore. Like, I feel like Ortega, we saw the size of Holloway against Aldo. And Ortega, I get the impression he's one of those guys is kind of this next generation of athletes where you're just like, oh, we're getting to real athletes now. Not just really good fighter athletes, like guys who could do actual sports maybe. And, you know, Jose, maybe he's not quite big enough for it. I don't know.
What have you noticed? He almost never throws leg kicks anymore. Like, that was his thing for years.
It's weird.
He just boxes.
I was thinking that too. I'm like, man. Like, I understand they don't feel good if you throw them, but when I'm watching him, it's like, why don't you just kick him in the knee? You can just, like, everybody knows as soon as Aldo kicks like one time, everybody goes ooh. Like, you feel the way that everything changes in there, and he could just walk out there and just kick him like four or five times right away. I know there's more to it, but on the other hand, there really isn't sometimes. Just kick him in the fucking leg. Everybody else, yeah. We saw Ernesto Hoost do this for years, so I know it could be done.
Like, I just feel like he's so one-dimensional now. Like, you know what I mean? Like the one BJ at the end there, just like, you know, he's just going to box you and do nothing else. It's like, it's just weird. And the fact that all those leg kicks were so good, so deadly. He would knock guys down with them, like just take out both their legs. They were brutal. And obviously the Faber fight in WEC is the most memorable one. But yeah, it's weird. I don't get it. And maybe he hurt his leg, or I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I wonder if guys like him and BJ, they're so talented so incredibly gifted, like with what they do technically and every and all that stuff, that when they're training, even if they're trying to work hard and do all their stuff, they know so much they can get through any training practice because very few people could truly push them. And so, but when they get into the, you know, into the cage, it's just everything goes up and they can't turn it up anymore. And they're physically not there. You know, the chin isn't there. The power isn't quite what it was. And so it's difficult for them to gauge because, again, they know enough to just kind of wall walk and box. You can get through any practice you want that way. And they don't have that fire. I guess what I'm saying is that he's a coward.
We also had Joanna Jędrzejczyk defeating Tisha Torres by unanimous decision, 30-27 on all three cards. Torres tried to get some takedowns. She couldn't get them, and Joanna was better on the feet.
Yeah, it was kind of a boring fight. It was, I guess it was important for Joanna to win. I think it's important for Rose's legacy, actually, that Joanna wins. Because you want Joanna to look like she's still a good fighter and not just kind of the next generation of women that are crashing and burning. You're going, uh-oh, they're just a little slower than it was before. So, you know, good solid win. Not like I was in, wasn't fun, but sometimes you got to do what you got to do, even if you're a chick.
After the fight on Helwani's show, Jędrzejczyk said, "My legacy is bigger than the top 10, so that's the point. After I lost, they all started to talk that they wanted to fight me, that I'm a bad person. They don't know me, so how can they say this? The point is, I've been in this business for 15 years, and I know there are some people who don't know much about this business. They are fans of martial arts, and they are trying to define my career off two losses to Rose. But I am bigger than that. That's why I keep my head very high. That's why I know I am simply the best, and last fight and second fight with Rose was about proving to myself that I am the best. Sooner than later, I will get my belt back."
She's got a weird way of proving things to herself, but to each their own, you know? I mean, it's kind of like it's like proving to yourself that you can skydive by not pulling the parachute.
She's refusing to call Rose the best fighter in the division.
That's fine. She can say whatever she's got to say. She's got to, you know, we all have to mentally get ourselves there. I say we all of us fighters out there have to say whatever it takes to get us out of bed in the morning. And let's face it, don't we kind of expect that of our athletes? You want some guy out there. Well, I guess we do want some of them, like Smiling Sam Alvey, I guess. But for the most part, like, it's a highest level. It's the level that people like Rose are fighting. I don't know. They can't go out there and be like, gives a shit. You know, I'm just having some fun. Like, they got to be out there and think, you know, I'm the best in the world. Otherwise, what are you doing? Get out of there. You're a little Polish lady. Go out and have some babies and clean a house.
In the opener of the main card on Fox, we had Alexander Hernandez defeating Olivier Aubin-Mercier.
You know, I really don't. Yeah, no, never mind. I was gonna do a Norm joke about Polish people, but eh.
Because those are original.
It was when Norm did it.
What, in the early 80s? 30-27, 29-28, 29-28. Nondescript fight. Nothing stands out to me at the moment. Except Hernandez is real monotone post-fight. His post-fight interview was funny.
He seems small.
I think he's short, but he's like jacked.
Yeah, he seems like he's got like that Sean Shirk feel, where you're just kind of like he's just like a little pain in the ass.
He's 5'9".
Yeah, just something about him. Like he seems almost undersized in the division, but yeah. he's also just wins because he's strong. So yeah, I'm not sure if I like him or not.
Kind of Dennis Seaver-ish.
Yeah, except for with more grappling.
On the prelims, we had Jordan Meehan defeating Alex Morono by unanimous decision.
Aww.
Hakeem Dawadu defeated Austin Arnett by unanimous decision. Islam Makhachev defeated Cajun Johnson with an armbar. And Ion Kutalaba defeated Gadzimurad Antigalov by TKO.
Main events anywhere in the country. Or the other country that they're in. Yeah.
And then on Fight Pass. Oh, we had that bet last week. You said it was going to be under 11 fights. I said over. I was correct. All 13 fights happened. Thank God.
Shit. Huh.
Yeah. John McDessie defeated Ross Pearson. Caitlin Chikagian defeated Alexis Davis. Dustin Ortiz defeated Mateus Nicolau. Nina Ansaroff defeated Ronda Marcos. And Devin Powell defeated Alvaro Herrera.
I wonder how that show was for the people alive. Like, it was like it ended good, but that sounds like a lot of fights. And I wouldn't want to watch that many fights if I was them. So I'm going to say that there's a lot of women in Calgary that had surly husbands coming home.
Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting. And that is your UFC on Fox Calgary review. Moving along here. For what it's worth, this was the 30th UFC on Fox, and it did the lowest rating in series history.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah.
That'd be a weird thing just to make up. The final numbers for Saturday's show averaged 1.6 million viewers. The number was down 18% from the July show last year and 41% down from 2 years ago.
Probably more lesbians fighting back then.
Last year's show had a Chris Weidman versus Kelvin Gastelum main event.
All right, yeah, more lesbians back then. They look like my cousin, so yeah.
2 years ago was Holm versus Shevchenko.
That's got some lesbian on it.
But this show, like, to be the lowest rated one, Alvarez, Poirier, Joanna, Aldo, like, for a Fox card, this is as loaded as pretty much any Fox card you're going to get.
Yeah, it's a good show.
And it did the worst rating ever. There's no other sports on. Huh. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, what was going on?
I don't think. There really has been nothing. It seems like kind of a. And it's a July show on Big Fox. I used to run that show in Chicago all the time. That was always an okay show. And I don't know. I guess Fox is intentionally tanking it because they're bitter.
That'd be weird.
It does seem like that's what happens, though, at the end. Like, they just stopped putting the promotion into it. Like everybody on both sides kind of like, okay, like, you're giving us okay shows. We're giving you no promotion. It's July. Let's just get this over with. Kind of like post, like, it's like right after sex. You're just kind of like, okay, like, we'll later and talk a little bit. Then you pay her.
That sounds horrible.
It is.
For her.
Yeah.
What else is going on here? Oh, speaking of bad numbers, UFC 226, that was champ versus champ, Cormier versus Miocic, where Cormier became champ, did 380,000
buys. Ooh, that seems like about, well, okay, I'll say this. I always round that up to like 400,000 just because I think I don't trust Dave Meltzer's estimates because he's, you know, a fucking retard. But 400,000, that seems to be like the low end of what I would expect out of that. Like, you would expect a little bit more. You'd want more. But losing the semi-main event, I think, did hurt. And I don't know if the July 4th weekend helps or not. It's also possible that there's something wrong with the month of July because this is like some really
it's
good.
It's broken.
Like some good UFC shows and people aren't watching. Maybe the sport's dead. Uh-oh.
I think sometimes shows in July have done well in the past, though.
Yeah. It's a new timeline. Alternate timeline, man.
I guess. I guess the overall theme here is that business isn't great right now. That's the best way to describe it. You're doing really shitty pay-per-view numbers. Fox isn't drawing on free TV. People will say, oh, I wonder why. And obviously it's a combination of things. If you don't have Jones, Ronda, Connor, I think it's the sort of thing where, you know, the tide helps raise all the ships sometimes. Like, there's just more press around the UFC when these big fights are happening, and the events on either side get a little bump because of it. Probably too many shows, too long shows. It's like, you and I aren't. Did you watch any of the stuff on Fight Pass for the show?
Oh, no.
Right, me neither. It's like, if we're not watching this stuff, Like, nobody is. Do you know what I mean? And it's at a point where it's a lack of stars. It's too many shows. It just seems like no big deal. The shows don't have a lot of meaning. The belts don't mean as much. It's some of all of that stuff. But you know what? It's going is not great, I don't think.
It doesn't seem great to me either, but it could be a shifting business model. Mm-hmm. And this is, you know, as you see, what's more and more important going forward, it seems, is not this. It's actually interesting. The UFC is kind of uniquely positioned, but like, the singular event can work every once in a while, but producing content, just content, content, content. That's what we are, a spoiled society that needs lots of new shit all the time. And just being able to put out something live that's cool and different. Maybe this is, you know, maybe these rich people have more money out there to play with than us poor people know about. And this revolution needs to happen sooner.
It could be a case where it's like 2014, where they had a down year and then they sprung back. There's no Ronda or Connor yet blowing up at that point, and they had a shitty year. And then, you know, the next 2-3 years were crazy. So, we'll see what happens, but they're definitely on a downtrend, popularity wise. You can't really debate that at this point, even though they're making more money. Like, they're still making more money. Like, in theory, 17, they had their most successful year financially, which is weird because all the metrics show that they're less popular and the business is doing worse. Yet, because of these big ass TV deals and rights deals, it's like they're doing better than ever. So it camouflages some of the truth. And it's the same thing with WWE. I think all their numbers are down too. And, but they get these huge TV deals, so they're good for the next, you know, 7 years.
Yeah, it's good to be rich, and then you get richer.
Yeah.
Probably because successful people do successful things and they don't like stop doing successful things once they get money. It's kind of like somebody, that's why you were not successful. You know, like I would say I could never be a billionaire because I would get like $1 million and be like, that's good enough. I got a TV. I got like a sofa. I got a little mini fridge and I got Uber Eats. I'm good. Let's just do it. $1 million is more than enough. I don't need a billion. Well, I have to do all that traveling then, because if you have $1 billion, you have to travel, because everybody in your life would be like, really? You have $1 billion, you just fucking watch Wheel of Fortune all day? Really? You're not flying to Madrid or Morocco? What do you mean Madrid tonight? But yeah, my point is that I'm a failure. In case anybody was on the fence is on that one.
Yeah, breaking news. Last night we had Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series, DWTNCS. It really rolls off the tongue. He handed out 4 contracts last night to Juan Adams, Ian Heinich, Jordan Griffin, and Roosevelt Roberts.
Gotta fucking admire a parent that names your kid Roosevelt. And that's a strong black name. That's got to be a black guy, right? Like, there's no way fuck a guy named Roosevelt is white. Come on,
he is black.
Yeah, he's like Grover. Like, there's certain names are just like, I don't know why, but I assume that you have to be a black guy to be called Roosevelt. But what a boss! He's got to have like a, he needs to have a mustache and be the kind of guy that owns like a brownstone or whatever the fuck those are called. And I think I'm thinking like a walk up maybe. And every once in a while, comes out on the stoop and he like, he's kind of like the neighborhood legend that keeps everybody in line, like Luke Cage, but for real.
Why would Roosevelt be a black name?
I don't know, but it just feels like one.
Interesting. Because I think Teddy Roosevelt, and he has a weird mustache.
Yeah, and FDR. None of the Roosevelts are black. I don't know, but there's something about Roosevelt. Maybe there's some TV character or something like that. I don't know. I'm just like associate like ugly name with black people, and I'm a huge racist. That's probably
that is likely true. Other things going on. I sent a picture of Roosevelt to you. He has a beard and a lot of chest tattoos, arms too. He looks, the guy he's fighting has a lot of writing on him as well.
Oh, this is not a Roosevelt at all. Oh, no. Roosevelt's got to be a big guy, barrel-chested, with, like, a short haircut and a bushy beard, like a mustache. Like,
Roosevelt is 6'2". He's just fighting at lightweight.
Yeah, no, you got to be like a Derek Lewis type.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like a kindly old black man, like a big old black guy.
Speaking of Derek Lewis, he's been very active on Instagram lately. I have been enjoying him. We also had Ryzen 11 over the weekend. It was at some weird time in the morning when everyone in America was asleep. I think most people in Japan probably slept through the show as well. The biggest fight with the most name value on it had Takanori Gomi defeating Melvin Gallard by knockout in the first round.
That thing looked like a work.
Why?
Just like, because like, I don't know, did Gomi get hurt or something? Did he, like, twist an ankle or
He was
knee?
Flopping around there.
It was weird. It seemed like they were fighting, and Gomi was kind of beating up Gallard. And then something happened to Gomi, and, like, they both stopped almost. And then it was, like, all of a sudden Gomi's like, okay, time for me to finish the fight. And they just, they went home to the finish. It was just bizarre. It's exactly what you would see in pro wrestling.
Hmm. What else did we have? The Gooch, Kyoji Horiguchi, defeated Hiromasa Okubo.
Yeah, important victory.
Diego Brandão defeated Satoru Kitaoka via KO at 130 in the first round. That fight was funny because the guy was going for like a knee bar or a leg lock or some shit. And Brandão kind of just turned around and started hammer fisting him until the ref stopped it. It was really good. It's like, let go of the leg lock, dummy.
I always love when guys just get so into the thing, or they just like find themselves in a position and they're not really sure what to do because they know that there is still a chance they could get that submission. And they know right. It's like, it's real close, but it's a really far away. Like, but if the right thing happens, it'll just be devastating. So they're just hoping like maybe something shifts. And next thing you know, you're waking up in the back of the locker room with some big old hairy dude flashing a flashlight in your eyes.
Huh. Give me a second here. It's being weird. Let's talk about Conor versus Khabib right now. Conor was on, I think, TMZ Sports or something like that. They got him somewhere. I don't know if it was in New York or what, but he told them, it's not official, but we're close. I believe so. I hope so that it will be in 2018. I'm pushing for it. You know, I fucking love New York City to be able to be here, a free man walking around this place. What a city. What free a fucking man. City. I'd love to fight in the Garden again, but I believe this one is for Las Vegas.
All right, whatever. Do your thing, Connor.
So the potential shows, if he's not just talking shit, obviously there's UFC 229 on October 6th. That seems a little early. The year-end show is on the 29th in Vegas. That would be UFC 232. If they're not going to do the Garden show in November, maybe 232. I don't know. Or maybe he never fights again. Oh.
Maybe they... do it for a private audience of just Vladimir Putin.
That could be. Imagine if Conor won that too. Be awesome.
Yeah, it would. Yeah.
I feel like Putin likes Conor more than he likes Khabib anyway. How could you not?
That's true. Although I think that Putin, it's a win-win for Putin. No matter what happens, you know, either he can like, you know, be the buddies with the biggest badass in the world, or Russia gets a superhero. And if Russia, like if Khabib loses, Putin can just have him killed. Like, that's not a problem. You have to walk around, you have to worry about backing the wrong horse here.
Dana also said he's not going to further penalize Conor McGregor for the most disgusting moment in UFC history, as he called it. He's apparently already paid his dues, and they are all good now.
Uh-huh. Yeah. He paid his dues. Yeah. I mean, they're not even trying anymore. They're just like, whatever. Just go for it, man. Just like, Conor, you can do anything you want. And everybody's watching this going, Yeah, no, I get it. Like, Connor is he's essentially a partner now in this company. He can do anything he wants. He made the gamble with Floyd. It paid off. I don't know if they didn't understand what was happening, how the market would shift, but Conor McGregor is an entity unto himself. He wants to throw shit through windows of your buses. You're just going to let him do it. And all the guys who bitch and moan, all these poor motherfuckers who lost paydays, lost opportunities, had their lives and careers and families impacted, yeah, fuck them. Conor has wanted to do something fun. Cocaine's a hell of a drug.
Verbatim, Dana said, no, whatever happens to him in court is going to happen. And let me tell you what, he's been penalized financially. This is going to cost Connor a shitload of money. He's been on the shelf for a while now and will be for even longer until this is finished. There's nothing more I can do to him than what's been done to him by the law.
Yeah, and
he
was true.
He basically pled guilty and has to do a few hours of community service.
I was going to say, yeah. The law gave him nothing. The law just said, you're good. So, yeah. Good job, Dana.
Speaking of Dana, he will presumably be at the Orpheum Theater in Los Angeles on Friday. UFC officially announced that they will be hosting one of those quarterly press conferences at 4:30 Eastern. Lots of fighters are expected to be there. Old Ariel Helwani says, as of right now, though it has been discussed, Conor and Khabib are not scheduled to be there. That could change in the next 48 hours. They are working on getting some other big names there who are not confirmed at this time. But that's the case as of this moment.
Huh. All right. I got nothing.
That's okay. You seem tired tonight.
Yeah, I'm just kind of out of it.
Interesting. Yeah. How come?
I don't know. I'm just, it's been a weird week. Like, Tuesday didn't feel like Tuesday. And a close friend of mine is going through some shit. And there's like, it's public now. Yeah, her dad died, like, unexpectedly and shit like that. And
shit.
And then there's just been, like, the dog has been looking at me funny. And I've been getting the love I need from him. Like, I feel like he's not been as cuddly as he should be. Something out of whack, you know?
Sounds rough.
It's tough.
Yeah.
Like, I've been buying all my food. Like, I haven't made any of my food this week. Because, like, when I came back from Detroit, I didn't have any time to buy food, prepare it. And so I just been...
Oh, yeah. I forgot about it. What do you... soccer or something? What was it?
Yeah, soccer.
What were you doing?
Liverpool, yeah.
I saw a bad selfie of you or something, I think, right?
There's no such thing as a bad selfie of me. But, yeah, I was there. That's what... And I think drinking on Saturday for the first time in, like, forever, like... That didn't help either, even though I didn't really get drunk because I'm so fucking old now. Shitty hotel, too. Huh.
Well, we assume that.
Motel 6, baby. When you stay at a Motel 6 outside an airport in Detroit, you are risking your life.
You must really like soccer.
And I like saving money. For $45 a night, I will risk it, man.
I've got something that's going to cheer you up.
Okay.
Ex-NFL All-Pro linebacker Sean Merriman will make his in-ring debut later this year in a bare-knuckle boxing match at the inaugural World Bare Knuckle Fighting Federation event Rise of the Titans in Casper, Wyoming.
Yes. Thank goodness. I wasn't sure if it was going to be the one in Wyoming or the one in, like, Shreveport or some shit. It's good to know that we got two of America's better states represented with the bare-knuckle boxing. Good to see... the trailblazer that is Greg Hardy setting an example for other NFL players out there. And then he's just more honest. Like, look, I don't wear gloves when I hit my wife. Why would I wear them when I hit a man?
WBKFF CEO Tom Stankiewicz said, We are thrilled to have Sean as part of our team. It's a very exciting time for everyone. Sean was a proven warrior on the field, and we look forward to seeing him in the ring. We feel that Sean signing with WBKFF opens the doors to champions from all sports and shows that he has the guts and courage to step into this gladiator sport. Bare knuckle fighting is the combat sport for the 21st century. We welcome Sean as part of our family.
I think that this is one of those warning signs, and I'm sure there have been a number of other warning signs in Sean Merriman's life, but
yes,
fighters are obviously always a different breed of people. We always say that, but that's true, because I think most fighters are people that grew up liking fighting. You know, they got into it young, or they kind of learned to love it, and they but they kind of part of the fighting culture, or they want to try it, or something about it. But this just strikes me as an asshole who wants to hit somebody. You know, like, he's just like, somebody just called him and said, hey, you want to get a bare knuckle fight? And I'm going to give you 20 grand. Because he's not, I'm sure they told him, we're just going to get some guy off a bar. You could beat him up. And he's thought, yeah, I can make some money. I don't have to be put in any danger. I'm going to beat the shit out of some guys. Like, he's just an asshole. He wouldn't fight a real person. I want to see him in there with a real fighter. And I want to watch him get beat up. Bring in Arlovsky.
Merriman said, this is really exciting for me. It's a real privilege and honor for me to come out and fight. Thank you to everyone at the World Bare Knuckle Fighting Federation for your support. It's time for Lights Out.
God, he's even got a shitty ass catchphrase.
Yeah. Who, was it Tila Tequila he supposedly beat up?
Did he?
I thought so.
I was just taking a stab in the dark that a big NFL football player who gets into bare knuckle fights post career had a domestic incident or two on his record.
Yeah, he was accused of choking Tila Tequila. He was also arrested for... Oh, same thing. Yeah, he got arrested for beating Tila Tequila up. She had like a shitty reality show on MTV.
So is his only thing ever really with just Tila Tequila?
I'm looking. That's all I said. That's all that's coming
up. Because if that's the case... I'm actually kind of impressed. I would have figured way more than that. Like, that doesn't count in my book. I know she's a woman, but she's not really a woman. Like, she's part of that weird, like Kardashian type world where I really have no idea what's real. I don't think she knows what's real. I don't think that those people exist in the real world. They exist in a world where she probably thought, oh, like, as he's like hitting her one time, she grabs his fist, like, no, hit me with this hand for the camera or something like that.
Huh. Yeah. Anyway, he's going to do bare knuckle boxing.
I might be wrong.
He's only 34. I feel like Merriman has been around forever.
He has been. He's a football player. He's had 10-plus years in the public eye. And not just the public eye, the most public of them all, the NFL.
Three Pro Bowl selections. Just a weird direction to go when he could have like probably done the same thing as what's his face there on Dana White Contender Series?
Yeah, I think that, again,
Greg Hardy.
That's kind of the point. He's not even as serious as Greg Hardy is about this. That's how much of a bully he is.
Right, but why not go that route and make more money? Like, what the fuck can these freaks in Casper, Wyoming be paying him?
It's not about getting paid. It's not just the payment. He doesn't have to train. He doesn't have to do anything. If he was fighting Dana White's Dancing with the Stars on Tuesday night show, he would have had to go out and train. But now he can just go out there and bare knuckle, and they're going to get some guy, and he's just going to be some overweight loser. It's going to be me. They're going to find some guy like me who thinks, fuck it, man. Back in the day, I'm a little overweight now, but I can beat this fucking football player. Fuck him. I fucking watch UFC. I know how this shit works. I'm going to fucking roll for a fucking knee bar on this guy, not appreciating what a world-class athlete is. Like, these are guys that... Honestly, he could probably beat up half the UFC roster right now. He's such a fucking athlete.
A matchup between UFC veterans Chris Lieben and Phil Baroni for the WBKFF light heavyweight title also has been announced for the event, which will additionally feature the launching of a $100,000 eight-man tournament featuring the likes of Melvin Gillard, Tom Galicchio, Josh Neer, Isaac Valley Flag, and Joey Bryant.
It's like they found the all-star undercard cast from a Strikeforce show in 2004
and they're going to give someone of them $100,000, and we all go, ooh, $100,000, and you realize that's $100,000, and that's all anybody's going to get paid. Nobody else is getting anything. So $100,000 for six, I don't know how many fights you get out of that, like a billion? Like, that's a lot of fights for $100,000. That's a good deal. And then if you're a bare-knuckle boxer, though, $100,000 is the pinnacle of your sport. So you've got to take that chance there. I mean, you want to be the guy who's on the cover of Bare Knuckle Boxing Monthly with a $100,000 check. You got to get that.
Have you heard the bad news about UFC 227?
The Gustafson's out, that fight?
No, even worse.
Did they really lose? Henry Cejudo is injured.
No. Betch Kohale is pulled from the card.
Oh, son of a bitch. What the fuck? Who's going to watch this shit now? This is ridiculous. They can't keep expecting people to hand them money if they're going to put on subpar cards like this. If I can't get a Betch Kohale fight, what the fuck am I even doing?
The Brazilian bantamweight, who was slated to face Irene Aldana at the Staples Center, released a long statement on her social media Wednesday criticizing the California State Athletic Commission, saying that CSAC made the decision to remove her from the event because of an eye surgery she had in October 2017, months after a loss to Holly Holm. She wrote, "I was surprised by the California State Athletic Commission stating that I couldn't fight on Saturday because of vision problems," Kohea wrote. "I came aware of my eye issues. I went through several ophthalmologists, part of the Brazilian Society of Ophthalmology. I took care of my health and my eye integrity, even being released by the doctors before the trip. I have current reports from three doctors who have been following me since the beginning, reporting that I am released to fight. I acted with dignity. I've been and I'm loyal. I'm fully aware that I can train and compete."
Yeah, I mean, this doesn't sound like, I'm sure she's frustrated, but it's not about, this isn't about loyalty or anything. This is bureaucracy, and maybe in a good way. Standard cliche applies. If somebody is preventing a fight from going forward for the health and safety of a fighter, I'm always going to side with the commission. Frankly, I'm at the point in my life now where if a fight is canceled for any reason, I think that's probably for everybody's best interest.
Andy Foster said the UFC has pulled her off a card, which they're entitled to do as a promoter. The promoter made the decision. The UFC made this decision.
Well, there could be something there, and it could be a Bisping situation. And God damn it, Betch. I know you're tough, but a one-eyed former cage fighter chick in Brazil, I don't know how far that's going to go. Like, you're going to that's a real small market of fetish porn you can do one day.
I'm reading some more of her statements. It sounds like it's retinal displacement is the issue. And wouldn't it be ironic that she got that injury in the Holm fight when Holm kicked her in the head because she was acting like an asshole?
Yeah, that would be good. It'd be fitting. Teach her a little biblical lesson.
Eye for an eye? No.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's exactly what it is. The Lord took one of her eyes as repayment for spitting in the eye, figuratively, of Holly Holm.
Wow. That is deep.
Dog.
3 years ago today, do you know what happened?
The fucking dog wouldn't get off the couch.
To this day, August 1st, 2015.
Ronda Rousey knocked out Betch Kohea.
That's correct. Good segue, boom. Right?
Yeah.
That took me like 45 minutes to figure that out.
Nice.
I'm like, huh, I can like shoehorn all this Betch Kohea talk together.
Well, usually you want to consolidate all of your Betch Kohea talk to one segment to maximize your return on her.
Yeah, this was, according to my math, Ronda Rousey's last win in an MMA fight also. Rashida Correa out. This show was in Brazil. I remember leading up to this show, there was a lot of talk that the show wouldn't draw well. They shouldn't be doing this thing in Brazil. She's fighting somebody nobody really knows in Correa, who had a couple wins over the other four horsewomen leading up to this fight. And then the show does 900,000 buys on pay-per-view with an undercard of Shogun versus Little Nog.
That's a good fight.
Yeah, I'm just saying this card had nothing else on it. This was all Rousey in Brazil in the middle of the summer doing 900,000 buys. And it was like her peak. She knocked Correa out. Like, she never knocks anyone out ever. And she just landed a right on the jaw and Correa crumpled down. It was awesome. It was awesome.
Yeah, I think that this fight was probably, well, yeah, that may have been the fight that kind of took her to a level that was unheard of. That's when she seemed to enter a pop culture level that was just like, whoa, like, this is crazy. Because, I mean, yeah, basically a million people bought a pay-per-view of her fighting in Brazil against nobody. Like, not even nobody. Like, it's I like Betch, but come on. And then, hey, and then she won with a knockout. It was a bit, like, talk about hitting the hype. And then Holly Holm fucked her. Because God likes Holly Holm.
Well, that run she was on, too. Like, completely unheard of. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, Correa knockout, 34 seconds. Kat Zingano, armbar, 14 seconds. Alexis Davis, knockout, 16 seconds. Sarah McMahon, TKO, a minute six. Misha Tate, armbar in the third. Liz Carmouche was a first-round win. Like, every one of her UFC fights were finishes, dominant, like, record-breaking speed. And that was just the peak, because then she lost her next two. But holy shit, was she a big deal then. And it just seems like that's so long ago with the other two losses. Like, you know, avoiding the media, just coming off bad in all these ESPN interviews since then. And now she's wrestling. Like, I don't even know who she's wrestling, but it's just amazing how quickly somebody's career in MMA can change just based on a head kick.
Yeah. Well, Mark Coleman's like, yeah, no fucking shit, man.
Right. But I mean, Coleman was never a star like Rousey. You know what I mean?
Oh, it's like, yeah.
Like, just what a difference from 3 years ago today. She's a wrestler in the WWF now. Nobody would have predicted that, you know?
Yeah, she's a little unique as far as MMA stars go, in that she didn't stick around. You know, everybody else, I mean, fucking Chuck Liddell is still trying to milk some mark for money. I mean, come on, like, for fuck's sake.
So, and
like,
maybe she will. Quick. Maybe she'll do the same. I don't know.
She might. Well, she kind of is in her own dorky way. But yeah, I mean, we've seen guys have big falls in MMA. You know, usually some guy gets figured out. You go, oh, okay. Or like, there's a style evolution or something. But boy, to go from not just like an unstoppable level, we're talking like literally rewriting the book of what it meant to be considered a dominant fighter.
Right.
And to go from that to, she has never looked competitive in a single minute of a fight since that fight.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah. It's crazy. It's crazy. And you wonder if she did some things differently, if it's the coaching, if whatever.
Maybe a little.
No, but I mean, it wasn't affecting her before that when she won 12 in a row. And you know what I mean? It's just a weird, weird thing. And I know some of that was just based on her own talent. It wasn't Edmund. And she landed a good shot in Correa, but it's not like Correa is any good anyway. It's just funny. And just the narrative is so negative and down on her, and she's a loser now. And
is she?
I mean, back then she wasn't. I'm just saying, the difference between then and now is it's night and day. It couldn't be any more different.
She also married Travis Brown, which honestly, like, it's more than just the losses. It was the complete failure in the movies, like, to the point where, like, that's dead. Nothing came of that. The Travis Brown thing, I don't think that actually did help her at all, because setting aside his background, just kind of the way he looks and the way she approached it and got into it. And then she goes into pro wrestling. And it's just like, she's complete that trifecta, man. I can just see her like, oh, she feels like she would have been a perfect WCW person. You know, she would get knocked up, some sort of trailer parkish thing. She'd be great.
She does have a movie coming out soon. I did see
22
something.
Mile.
Yeah, yeah. Is it Marky Mark, Mark Wahlberg or something in that?
Yeah, I saw it. And, like, I didn't even know she was in it until I saw a commercial. And, like, they barely showed her. I'm like, oh, wow. They don't not pushing her at all, are they?
Let's see. Where is she listed here? She's listed. Oh, is this alphabetical? According to this, she's listed third from the top. I don't know if that means anything. Huh.
And the commercials didn't really seem to show her. I still have not seen her talk. Like, she never talked on television.
Smart.
Yeah.
You know what's funny? Early on, though, on like Showtime and stuff, when she was fighting for Strikeforce, she seemed like charismatic at the time to me. Like, I remember thinking, like, oh, she's going to be a star or whatever. Not just because she was winning with the armbar. She's calling out like Cyborg and shit back then. Like, there was something no, like.
She was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. She is a great example of the, you know, the Ken Shamrock type of deal. Not just overexposure, but the Ken Shamrock deal where certain guys work better in when it's real. Mm. And they, you know, like Ronda was great until she lost.
Right.
And then it was always, you know, look, she realistically has only ever done one thing. She had one loss, and then she was kind of weird after that loss, and then she never did anything again. So we've never really seen her. I mean, she's pro wrestling. She sucks. But actually, she's not that bad. But
she's good in the ring.
She was just really awesome at first in MMA, though. And some of that's just kind of the timing of it all. It was a character. It was Goldberg, you know? Like, the fun of Goldberg is in the rise in that streak. And as soon as the streak ends, like, okay, like, if Goldberg just comes out there and says, who's next or whatever, you're next or some shit, like, the next week on television, you're like, yeah, okay, now it's just a catchphrase. All right.
Next.
I saw a guy today on the street wearing a Hot Ronda t-shirt.
Shut up.
I swear I saw it. And it was one of those signs where I'm just like, oh, I don't, the world doesn't make any sense, because he was a, look at probably about 5'8", rail thin, maybe 125, 130-pound black kid. Looked like he was really, like, hip and, like, kind of, like, the shirt was kind of, like, big for him, but the sleeves didn't look like they were big. I don't know. He had, like, weird-looking, like, shit in his nose. I'm just like, what's going on? Why is this person wearing that? I don't.
What do you mean? What is weird looking shit in his nose? Like a piercing? What does that mean?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like a dude with a fucking hoop piercing in his nose. Like, okay. That's weird.
Like through like the middle. That's sort of like the septum.
Yeah. And like he's
whatever.
A. No, it was like a little hoop thing.
Through. All right. And, through like a nostril.
And he had like kind of like big poofy like Boondocks type of looking hair. And so. And it was kind of just weird. Like, I see a lot of weird people in the city. Like, there's a lot of weirdos walking around. And I just kind of look at it. And I think it's beautiful. I love seeing all these people. The diversity is great. But I was looking at him going, what the fuck are you wearing a Ronda Rousey shirt? Like, what is happening? Leaving Panda Express, walking past the 7-Eleven where I sometimes get hot dogs. And that's when I saw the guy.
Yeah, that's not weird at all. Tomorrow night we have PFL 5. The tournament continues. I did enjoy their last show. This show is headlined by Jason High versus Nathan Schulte. High's 0-1 in the tournament. Schulte is 1-0. We've also got Vinny Magalhaes versus Brandon Halsey. Will Brooks versus Robert Watley. Rashid Magomedov versus Luis Firmino, and Maxim Grishin versus Rakeem Cleveland in a light heavyweight fight.
Rakeem Cleveland, that's a great name. That's an awesome name. That's got to be a black guy, too. No way. There's no way a white guy is named Rakeem Cleveland.
Correct, yes. He appears to be African-American. And then we've also got on the prelims Chris Wade. Oh, and Efrain Escudero missed weight by 6 pounds and has been kicked out of the tournament. He's no longer allowed to compete.
I guess that's what you do. Like, I miss when he's out of the fight, but I like that they kind of like to think that they formally kicked him out of the tournament. Like, you are no longer permitted to be in this most important and sacred of tournaments, the Professional Fighters League. You're not going to really get the $1 million because we're totally going under before we get there, but maybe you will tournament.
I believe that's the case. Let me confirm. I don't want to speak badly of Efraim.
No, that's fine. You can.
Former. No. I like to get this right. Wow. According to Twitter here, you type in Efraim Escudero in your search bar. There's been 60 tweets about him today. So very active for him. Ariel says he weighed 163.2 pounds this morning, 7.2 pounds overweight. His opponent, Islam Mamedov, gets 3 points plus his show and win money. Escudero is now eliminated from playoff contention.
Yeah, it's a very serious playoff contender. Real serious tournament when people get bumped out of the playoffs because they didn't even come close to doing their job.
Huh, this is interesting because you know that rule where they can't be too far apart in weight? Like, I don't know if that came into play for Gastelum. There was some fight in New York where it was like they would have. It was a Cerrone fight. Was Cerrone supposed to fight somebody? And the fight got canceled because the guy weighed too much more than him.
Oh, was that one of those weird ones where Cerrone was going to move up or something?
Or who remember. Knows? I don't remember. I can figure it out, but I don't care that much. But yeah, I think New York's got a rule where you've got to be within whatever 8% of each other's weight, and
or it's a $200 fine,
or you pay us some money and we let you fight with brain damage. Yeah, so that happened. Efraim, former tough.
Yeah, how the mighty have fallen. He went from the highest of highs, Ultimate Fighter season whatever winner, to Professional Fighters League.
I'm impressed. If you know that they won tough, that's pretty good in this day and age. I couldn't tell you that's who true. Won the last 20, probably, I'm guessing.
Nico Montano.
Oh, good one.
And Tatiana Suarez.
Impressive.
Yeah. Holy fuck. Wait, I have no idea. Which one just happened, though? We just finished one. I don't know who did
Cormier. It was Cormier and Miocic.
I can barely remember the coach on that one.
I didn't watch any of it, but they would have fought. Oh yeah, they kind of makes on that me show.
Angry. Which angers part? Me what that show is because I just had fond memories, and then they just fucking ran it into the ground.
Well, it's like anything; you get too much of it, and it's not special anymore.
It's like the Simpsons. Like, The Simpsons for the longest time was this incredible thing where it's like, wow, look at all these great seasons. And now there's been way more seasons of shit than seasons of good, to the point where it's like, on the whole, just like The Ultimate Fighter, like, on the whole, The Ultimate Fighter has been a negative. There's just been so much garbage at the end.
But it's probably it's not even that much different than it was originally. You just get tired of it. It's like anything, whether it's music or whatever. Yeah.
These guys are all pansies. Nobody's fucking pissing on anyone.
That's right. That's true.
And also, seriously, how did they not have a single... How has nobody had sex on that show? That is baffling to me. Baffling. That there's not been an orgy or something? Come on. All these people, all testosterone, all like... These are our warriors. All warriors do is eat meat and fuck.
Speaking of warriors, Kayla Harrison is going to return to PFL.
Like,
are
you
six.
Telling me that Chris Lieben didn't fuck Thacker there? I mean, come on.
I doubt it.
Do you?
Yeah. If I had to bet, I would bet they did not have intercourse.
Okay. All right, homophobe.
Totally. Harrison. The two-time Olympic gold medalist in judo meets lightweight Josette Cotton in the main card portion of PFL 6 on August 16th. That's going to
take place. Is that in Oklahoma?
No, the Ocean Resort Casino in Atlantic City.
Oh, I heard casino. For some reason, I thought Oklahoma. And then you hear that name, like Cotton, I thought, did they really just fucking grab some poor, like, desperate for a shot of whiskey Indian girl and
Tell her, get out there and get beat up by the best in the world.
Cotton enters the PFL cage on a 2-fight winning streak, which boosted her professional record to 8-1.
I know. Is 2 a streak? I mean, I know that's like maybe the bare minimum of a streak, but that feels like the beginning of a streak. That's not a streak.
That's like when like if it's the Patriots or Red Sox and they win the first game of the season, and my joke is, oh, can you believe the Patriots are undefeated this year?
Yeah.
Same joke. So I immediately Googled Josette Cotton, and she does not appear like she's going to win this fight just based on appearance. I'm going to send you the link to her Sure Dog as you talk here.
All right. I guess I could do some talking as you're doing some typing. As he's doing some typing, I'm doing some talking. This isn't even talking. It's just me saying the word talking back and forth a lot. Ugh, I'm kind of an idiot.
Yeah.
I just watched Mike Tyson knock out some dude, though.
She might be like 155 pounds and 5'2".
Oh, my gosh. Awesome. I can't wait. Oh, ho, ho. Well, hello, Josette. Oh, that is almost exactly what I thought Josette would look like.
She's not 5'2", she's 5'9". Wow.
God, I mean, look at that fucking blubber. She is a disgusting beast. And she's not even like a big girl because she's got a small head. So she should be a lot smaller than this. I hope she wins, though.
That would be a big upset. We should find out the odds on that fight. Those are probably some pretty long odds. It's tomorrow night.
That pro wrestling chick from TNA almost beat Gabby Garcia. So anything can happen in women's
MMA. Well, Gabby Garcia is not very good at stuff.
She's a world champion and grappler.
Right. I understand that. But it doesn't mean she can fight.
Kayla Harrison's the same thing.
I feel like Harrison's more of an athlete than Gabby Garcia and can pick up striking better than Gabby Garcia.
All right, Trump. All right.
I think her Olympic...
Tamp it down there, Mr. Wall Builder, all right?
I think Harrison's credentials are more impressive than Gabby Garcia's.
Oh, yeah, you got to have the right papers, huh? That sounds like you. Yeah, got the right fucking papers. You want us to show her papers? Like, oh, you have the right credentials. No good. Not as good. Next, you're gonna accuse her of being on drugs just because she's from south of the border, huh? You think you can because Garcia uses a lot of drugs? I bet.
She looks pretty. She looks clean. Josette Cotton's nickname is the number one headbuster.
I would have had her nickname be Pickin'.
Clever.
I mean, if you're black and your last name is Cotton, there's no way that could ever go well. Like, your whole life, everyone will always look at you and kind of make the joke. Even if you're best friends, they will be aware of it. Your life will be defined by the fact that you are black and your last name is Cotton.
I can't believe I can't find betting odds on this anywhere. These have to be some long fucking odds.
I mean, it's at a fucking casino. Can't you just go to that casino?
I typed in Kayla, PFL 5 betting odds, maybe.
I don't know.
Hang on.
Hey, everybody. No. Welcome to MMA and stuff. Oh, well, it is August. He's fucking true. Nailing this one, people.
True.
He's nailing this one. Is she in a tournament? They should create this as a retroactive. This should be a retroactive tournament.
I don't even know what month it is. Oh, football betting odds. Oh boy, this is not. This is gonna get some viruses on here. This does not look good. I even know what I'm looking at right now. Wow. B win. All right. Yeah, I can't find that. I'll get them when we're closer though, because. If you bet on the underdog in that one, you can retire.
Doesn't look like there are any odds up.
Isn't that odd?
I should just fucking end this show now.
On Saturday night, we have UFC 227. Dillashaw versus Garbrandt 2. The rematch.
No one asked for.
Garbrandt asked for.
Yeah, that's true. It's a good fight, actually.
Garbrandt has not had sex for 3 months leading up to this fight.
Is this no? Is this news? Going 3 months without sex, that's a big deal?
He says he's going to ravish his wife after the show.
Probably, yeah. She's been getting it from the neighbor kid, though.
Yeah. Well, how do you say ravish? Ravish. No one says that. That's an odd word choice.
Well, ravage.
You're no, ravage that's with like R-V-A-G-E. No. This is R-A-V-I-S-H.
Yeah, well, ravish. Ravishing Rick Rude.
Right. No, but you never hear anybody use that word like that.
Maybe what if he wants to get real kinky and he grabs some vegetables and introduces it into the bedroom. Maybe that's what he was talking about.
He wants
to have sex with some radishes. Yes.
Kinky. So this is a rematch. Dillashaw won the first one. He got knocked down in the first, almost finished, but was kind of saved by the bell. Then Garbrandt got knocked out in the second. What's going to happen this time, Mr. Coughlin? This is going down at the Staples Center.
But if, I think I picked Garbrandt to win the first time. It could go either way. There's some brilliant analysis there. Look, Garbrandt almost did win this fight in the first time around. Also, you know, he came really close to knocking TJ out in that first round. Bell saved him. Yeah, but still, it did save him. I'm watching a 19-year-old Mike Tyson fight a guy named Reggie Gross, which seems like a name out of a video game. Yeah, Garbrandt's going to – I don't know. That's probably – it's also his first loss. We have no clue how that's going to work with him. He's lost in boxing probably, I'm sure, because if he didn't lose in boxing, he'd just be doing that for more money. So he – I'm going to pick Cody Garbrandt because I like him more than I like TJ, even though I hate the neck tattoo.
Yeah, I don't find either of these guys real likable. I don't know.
They are both kind of dicks.
Kinda. Like Garbrandt, like, I don't know. I'm not, there's something about guys who wax their eyebrows. Just not into it.
They seem like two dudes that, like, you would see them. Like part of like two groups of like assholes like at the beach, and they both be like getting some sort of like kerfuffle, and you wouldn't want to take anybody's side. You just look at you just be like, you're all assholes. It's not like one guy kicks sand and somebody else can be like, no, you're all dicks. Just stop. Like you're all just drunk bros. Get over it. They are two bros. Like it's like Kappa Gamma versus Kappa Delta.
Just bros being bros.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. In the co-main event, we've got Demetrius Johnson versus Henry Cejudo. This is also a rematch. DJ won the first one. I think it was a body shot or something. I probably should have looked this up. Yeah,
it was
right?
A knee up the middle, yeah. It was a brutal knee up the middle. And Cejudo went down because he realized, this is a fight. It's not my pansy little wrestling thing. Real men do this sport.
Has Cejudo improved enough since that time to give him a better fight? No. Even with the Wilson Hayes and Pettis wins.
Nope. And in fact, the more he improves, the worse chances he has.
Interesting.
A guy like Cejudo, his best chance is to beat DJ by being so completely dominant in one area, wrestling, basically, or cardio, something, you know, athletic, something where you like DJ can't contend with it, but you start trying to like evolve into a total mixed martial artist, you are so far behind Demetrius Johnson, you're not catching it. He's gonna whoop your ass. He's gonna make it look easy. You see this a lot with guys get away from their strengths. They start trying to like, you know, I can kind of box, and they can, but you realize DJ, he whooped his ass the first time and he's only gotten better.
Even though Cejudo's an Olympic gold medalist, like a better athlete on paper than DJ, he can't catch him at this point.
There are certain people who were born to do certain sports. Like, yeah. And I think DJ was, this is his sport. Like Manute Bol would not be good at hockey.
And Demetrius Johnson, however, is good at MMA.
Nick Bull wasn't even good at basketball.
He was in the NBA. I mean, that's pretty good. I haven't been able to do that, so I'm not going to criticize him too much.
If you were the Manute Bol size, could you be in the NBA?
Probably, yeah.
Okay.
But I'm not.
So we're going with, what did we say, Garbrandt and Mighty Mouse?
Yeah.
Okay. There's also rumors that Garbrandt wants to move down in weight and fight Mighty Mouse.
That's always so weird, man. It's not like he looks like he's small out there. So
it seems like a rough weight cut. Let's see how tall Garbrandt
is. Here's the thing. TJ was talking about doing that also. So I'm guessing these guys are all – I'm guessing this is kind of one of those situations where 35, 25, maybe in some of the 45ers are similar to some of those weird 170, 85, 205 guys. Where, you know, like, it doesn't seem like there should be a crossover, but there's actually been shockingly, like, high number of guys who've moved between those weight classes. You're like, I don't think this is really normal.
Garbrandt's 5'8".
Wow.
Imagine being 125 pounds.
Yeah, you know what you would be? You'd be that black kid I saw on the street. And trust me, if I saw that guy in the street... I assure you, I don't care if I knew that was Cody Garbrandt. If I saw a man that size, there's no way in shit I'd be afraid of him. I don't care if I knew it was Cody Garbrandt. I see somebody that small and thin, I'm thinking, fuck you, I could whoop your ass. I could just like push you against the forehead with the palm of my hand.
I'd be remiss in mentioning this. This show's going to fail miserably on pay-per-view, but you're really talking probably the two best guys in each division right now. You're like, these are elite level fights. You've got two title fights and the rightful number one contenders in both divisions. You don't get that a lot. So you're getting the best of the best here. There's just no name value. There's no star quality here. But if you're into fights, it doesn't get much better than these two.
Well, I will say that you can kind of give the UFC some credit lately in that in June here in Chicago, there was Romero and Whitaker. That was about as good as you could get. That's a real title fight. They had a real heavyweight super fight. They almost had a real featherweight fight. So, you know, there's a lot of almost happening there. And these are two real fights. Now, I'm sure one of them's not going to happen. I'm guessing if there's something happens to Cejudo, that's going to be my call. But
he misses weight sometimes.
Yeah, it's sad. Like, I don't feel the buzz for this. But I don't know what the buzz is, and I don't even know where I would feel it. So,
I mean, there was some buzz for that first Dillashaw Garbrandt fight, but it seems like that was so long ago, and the fight got delayed. And Garbrandt had that back injury. Now it's been
that's an awesome fight, though.
It's been 10 over a year. Yeah, it was November. Oh, not November 17. So,
yeah.
But there was some heat there between them, and it was a good feud. They hated each other. Even the finish where Dillashaw was screaming in his face, like that was kind of it was kind of almost like iconic. But they haven't been able to follow up on it at all. The feud between the snake in the grass, Dillashaw and Faber and Team Alpha Male, that whole storyline, you just don't see it this time around. And I don't know. I don't know what the reason is. We've also got Thiago Santos versus Kevin Holland at middleweight, Pollyanna Viana versus JJ Aldrich, and Cub Swanson versus Renato Moicano opens the show.
Enjoy watching this. Remember, just search for UFC 220, what is it, 7?
Yes.
227 on Twitter. Pull up the live video, and I'm sure you'll be able to get this for free. I don't feel bad for saying this. This is a public service announcement. I'm doing a favor to everybody. I don't know why you would pay for this. If they're going to let it be up there for free, I think you have an ethical obligation to take them up on their offer.
You're just reporting facts here.
Damn right. That's all I am.
The prelim card, which is always fun when it's on FX, has Pedro Munhoz versus Brett Johns, Ricky Simon, Simone? I don't know.
Like anyone gives a fuck.
Montel Jackson.
Oh, Max, Montel Jackson.
I wonder what color he is. And well, Matt Sales versus Shaman Moraes. Well,
yes. Well, yeah, exactly. I bet Shaman Moraes isn't white either. Is so that racist? Like, if the guy's name
so
was
judgmental.
If the guy's name was like, I don't know, Brandon Jameson, I'd be like, yeah, sounds like a white guy. Also sounds like a date rapist. You know, we all have our crosses to bear. People early... see women see me and they don't like to leave their drinks unattended. I know what it's like.
The early preliminary card on Fight Pass has Jose Torres versus Alex Perez, Ricardo Ramos versus Kyung Ho Kang, Danielle Taylor versus Zhang Weili, and Marlon Vera versus Luigi Buren.
Yeah. Luigi Buren. We needed a Luigi.
Waluigi. That's what almost it's spelled WULIJI. That's pretty close to Waluigi. Big Mario fans in this household. I don't know what you got going on over there.
I play a lot of Tetris. I play a lot of I probably play like an hour of Tetris a day.
You could be a lot more productive, I feel like.
Well, I also listen to podcasts while I do it, and I'm riding the train.
Okay. All right. That's
and I also and I also like catch up on my morning reading and texts and correspondence and stuff like that.
Mm. Okay. In sadder news than your life, a couple pro wrestlers died. I know, but death is worse than what you have going on, I think.
Yeah, I would say that a dead pro wrestler is about as sad a thing as it gets. It's like a dead clown.
Brian Christopher Lawler, also known as Grandmaster Sexay, has died after attempting suicide in his jail cell. The Tennessee Bureau of Investigation...
Well, it doesn't sound like he attempted it so much as he succeeded.
Yes, he accomplished his goal. Says the 46-year-old son of WWE Hall of Fame wrestler Jerry the King Lawler was found hanging in a cell on Saturday. The agency says officers performed CPR and Lawler was taken to a hospital in Memphis where he died Sunday. Authorities are investigating. Lawler was placed in jail on July 7th. The agency says he was booked on charges of driving under the influence, driving on a revoked license, and evading arrest.
You get put in jail for a DUI and you're still in there a month later, you're in a real bad spot. Like,
why would that happen?
Because he's got a horrible drug and drinking problem that's destroyed his life. Like, you get to that point, nobody bailed you out. Nobody's giving you second chance. Like, nobody goes to jail for, like, you go to jail for a DUI overnight and you sober up and they let you go. I mean, they say, don't drive your car and blah, blah, blah. Like, it happens all the time. Like, you get to that point, jail, it's not that the world thinks he's not necessarily a danger to society so much as they got to free up that jail space. They got to turn those rooms over, man. Like, they can't have a guy occupying all that jail. Like, that costs money. They could put in like two smaller guys and one big Brian Christopher. Get any, two guys like that black guy that I saw today.
Any memories of Grandmaster Sexay? Anything come to mind?
I found that act to maybe be the most annoying thing I've ever seen in my life. In any venue, any medium, it doesn't matter, real, fake. I found them horrible. He in particular, I'm sorry, I know he's dead, but oh my gosh, he is so annoying. He was just the way he would cackle and bounce on the ropes. Him and Jerry Lawler both actually just, I could see where, like, if you were as, like, if you'd like been in Memphis or whatever, I could see getting liquored up and just saying, you know what, I know it's fake, but fuck this guy, what a dick.
Was that part of the character, though?
Maybe, but I don't care. Okay. Then I'm criticizing. He should be happy that I'm cursing his dead body because he's so good at his job.
In other dead wrestler news, Nikolai Volkov died. He was 70. His wife Ling confirmed his death Sunday. She says he has had heart problems and that when she went to give him medicine, he was unresponsive. WWE said Volkov was one of the greatest villains sports entertainment had ever seen. He was known for singing the one-time Soviet Union's national anthem before matches for his tag team alliance with another wrestler known as the Iron Sheik.
It's kind of weird how if you look back at that, one of them is kind of like this fondly remembered little kind of dumb gimmick, and the other one it seems like a racist caricature parody. Like people be like, "Oh my gosh, the Iron Sheik," even though the Iron Sheik was actually that's actually him, but still, yeah, I don't know. It's a different time, man. Although maybe it's not. The Russians are back. Maybe he knew something. Maybe Putin took care of him.
Could be it.
He was a good man, though. He was a real good man. Like, he was a defector, and he always spoke out, like, very, very well spoken about how much he hated communists and the Soviet Union, and how he knew, like, he considered it an honor to play the role because that would, like, teach Americans to hate the Soviet Union even more. I'm like, this dude's a badass. Like, that's kind of American I want.
I think he was born in Yugoslavia.
Yeah.
And then he, like, I think he got asylum or something. I don't know if it was in Canada or what exactly he did. But, yeah, he came over, had a good run, I guess. I remember I saw him at, like, a high school show. The show took place at a high school. It was a WWF show, like, in 93, 94, when they were really in the shits. And it was him versus Adam Bomb. It was like the worst show I ever saw. Like, I'm trying to think. I was probably like 15 at the time, maybe. And I was reading Torch, and I think I was reading Observer already. But it was such a bad show. Like, it was like a fundraiser or something they were doing for, like, the fucking local hockey team. Like, this is not your $250 million Fox deal, WWE. This was like a company, like, struggling to pay the bills. And this Volkov and Adam Bomb match was so bad. Like, we got front row seats for the show because it was at the local high school. And because
it came with a bowl of soup.
The kicks Volkov was, like, laying into him. They were the loosest kicks you've ever seen. They were, like, barely touching him. It was those where you hold on to the ropes and you, like, jump up and, like, hit one, your first leg hits, then your other leg, you hits the guy. So bad. One of the worst matches I've ever seen. And I saw some WCW stuff in 01, but this was bad.
I'm glad that on the segment where we eulogized the recently dead, all we did was each one of us just relentlessly shit on one of them.
Owen Hart on that show, he also, like, people were throwing stuff in the ring because the match sucked. And he took the trash people were throwing in the ring and put it in his knee pad and then kneed Davey Boy Smith with, like, the shit in his knee pad. That was pretty good.
I like how everybody in that story is dead.
Yeah, I'm living it up over here, though.
Yeah.
Drinking my iced coffee.
Ugh. Doesn't it have caffeine in it?
You know, yeah, you know, I'm at a point where I'm drinking my coffee black now. Like, I've really got to a bad place with it.
But I don't drink it at all, so I don't even really know what that means. Is it stronger then?
It's just, like, when I was a kid, like, my mom would drink, like, black coffee, and I'd be like, oh, that's so nasty. And, like, I graduated from, like, you know, you get a nice coffee once in a while, like, it's got, like, chocolate or mocha. Then I'm like, all right, I'm just getting iced coffee. Now I'm drinking, like, espresso at work, just, like, straight espresso with nothing in it. Like, it's getting out of control.
Well, I was thinking about that the other day with Starbucks, and this, you know, Starbucks very prides themselves on being very smug and socially progressive and all this stuff. It's like, meanwhile, you people make money. All they do is make money selling people sugar infused with caffeine. It should be illegal to sell this shit that they sell at Starbucks. This isn't coffee. It's ice cream with caffeine in it.
You seem like you're a free market person. If that's what the public wants, let them have it. What the hell? You want weed to be legal? People can't have coffee? What the fuck is wrong with you?
Honestly, sometimes my laissez-faire libertarian streak does devolve into one-man, strongman authoritarian rule. It comes and goes. I don't deny it. Every once in a while, I do like the idea that the anarchy that would eventually result from no government would lead to one strong man, and that I would be that man imposing arbitrary rules and shaping the world to how I want it to be.
That sounds far-fetched.
That's what they said. That's what they've told every great man in history. Nobody told Alexander the Great. Yeah, that's totally doable, kid. They all told him. There was some asshole back then that told him, hey, it's pretty far-fetched, even though he was dead by the time he was 35.
and also gay.
So you got one thing in common.
Exactly. I'm dead inside.
An Egyptian zoo, changing gears here, no segue. An Egyptian zoo is insisting it did not paint a pair of donkeys to look like zebras.
Yes, it did.
Cairo's
international. I don't know the story, but I know they did it, those motherfuckers.
Here, I'll send you the picture.
I don't really care.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, don't be a dick. Yeah. I know that's hard for you. Yeah, that sounded weird.
Yeah. That's what she said.
Hang on. Okay. The weird donkey picture is going to come right up after Josette Cotton.
Yeah, we're sending a message. Somebody at Facebook has got this flagged.
An Egyptian. So anyway, Cairo's International Garden Municipal Park became a target of ridicule after an Egyptian student, Mahmoud Sarhan, posted images on Facebook of the suspicious beast. Sarhan said that the zoo's two zebras were obviously painted donkeys, a view that has since been embraced by online animal experts. However, zoo director Mohammed Sultan told a local radio station that his zebras are real, dismissing the claim that they are just painted donkeys. This is not the first time that the zoo has painted donkeys to look like zebras. In 2009, a zoo in Gaza did the same thing, saying that it could not procure real zebras due to an Israeli blockade.
Oh, yeah. That's always you got to love it when why don't we have any zebras? The Jews did it. Yeah, like, that's your blockade. Like, well, they're keeping us from getting food and medicine, and no zebras are allowed in. Oh, damn. Like, I'm reading this story. I'm looking at this. In 2013, a Chinese zoo was criticized for trying to pass off a large dog as a lion. Well, yeah. I bet there's a lot of kids going, Mom, I don't think that's a lion. Like, that looks like Shelby. What's going on?
Yeah. It's so weird because, like, in America, like, obviously there's issues in the United States. But we don't have people like painting donkeys at the zoo pretending that they're zebras. It's like so weird, like the shit we take for granted, whether it's like law and order or whatever it might be. But like, I just don't picture that happening in the States. And it's like, there's so many weird countries out there where they've got it so much worse than we do. And we just take shit for like granted that, like, I see a story like this. I'm like, I cannot imagine that happening at the San Diego fucking zoo in a million years.
No, exactly. You're right. It's one of those things we take for granted, I'm sure, just how much of our society is regulated. Because, like, there's no law or regulation, I'm sure, that prohibits the painting of a donkey to look like a zebra. Because it's probably like, you know, nobody would do that. It would be such a joke because this would happen. Like, you would see that, like, in some Alabama State Fair, maybe, or something really dumb. But you're right. No respectable zoo's going to do that. I'm basically saying that Roy Moore voters would fall for this.
But, like, nobody would even bother trying. Like, what's the point? You just wouldn't have zebras. Why do you have to have zebras in that pen at that shitty zoo in Cairo? It's not like that. Is that drawing people there, those painted donkeys? Like, I don't even get the rationale they might have.
I think that. And this is one of those weird ones, but my suspicion is that there's kind of like a very big pride and shame culture kind of in a lot of the Middle East. And I could see them, like, they're very proud, like, we have zebra, we are best, like, and like it doesn't matter if you lie about it. Like, if you lie about it, it's okay. I don't totally get it. I guess I'm saying that Muslims are shifty and lie a lot. Oops. That was wrong. Fucking so stupid.
You've had better, but you've also had worse.
Yeah, that's for sure.
In other news, a San Antonio aquarium has recovered a shark stolen in a baby stroller. Two men have confessed to snatching a small shark from a Texas aquarium's interactive touch tank, then whisking it away, wrapping it in a blanket, and concealing it in a baby stroller, police say.
I'm sorry, but
Maybe the fault is with the interactive touch tank that apparently just scooped a baby shark out of the water and handed it to somebody. Maybe you don't have that setting available on the interactive touch tank.
Miss Helen, the 16-inch long gray horn shark, was returned to the San Antonio Aquarium on Monday night, 2 days after the heist was captured on surveillance video. The surveillance footage shows a man plucking the shark from the tank and carrying it away off camera, still dripping water. Another man is then seen depositing a blanket-wrapped item into a stroller and walking off, accompanied by the first man and a woman carrying a child. Police said the men put the shark into a bucket before placing it into the stroller. The shark was recovered Monday night from a home filled with fish tanks and other marine life. Police Chief Joseph Salvaggio said the men confessed to the shark snatching and investigators plan to talk with the woman on Tuesday. It appeared one of the men was knowledgeable about marine life and likely went to the aquarium specifically for that shark.
Well, I would hope that they had a game plan. If you're going to steal a shark, like, I hope that's not a spur of the moment. Just kind of like, hey, Bob, you want to see that shark? Yeah, sure. What the fuck? I got nothing to do today. It's a Tuesday. I got a bucket. You got a bucket? I got a bucket. Let's go steal a fucking shark. Unless you're drunk. I guess if you're drunk, you could accidentally steal a shark. Otherwise, I'm kind of surprised that they had a bucket. I didn't see that coming.
Well, I was thinking to myself, I'm like, if they got the shark back after 2 days, I'm like, how was it alive out of water all that time?
I guess I'm grateful that there's some dude that had an aquarium, so maybe they knew to use salt water, because I didn't just mention this shark having fresh water, and I assume that poisons his gills or whatever the fuck it would do. So, this fucking shark, I feel bad for the shark, too. Like, it's not enough that you went from, like, hey, look at this. You get to be in the ocean. You can literally go anywhere you want, and you're a shark. So you have no danger. The world is literally your plaything. And then they stick you in this tiny little fucking tank in SeaWorld or whatever. You're like, fuck me, this sucks. And then some assholes grab you and throw you in a bucket inside of a baby stroller. And you got to be looking, going, what the fuck is going on here? Like, am I going to be put like a shot glass next? Come on, guys.
I also like the fact that they brought their like baby with them to steal this shark. Like, they're like, oh, well, let's go to the aquarium for the day. And then when you're there, you're like, oh, we might as well steal this fucking shark while we're here too. And then you take the kid out of the stroller and you have the mom carry the kid around the stroller without the stroller all day while you push the shark around in it.
What the fuck is that kid gotta be imagine you're some like 2-year-old kid or whatever they are in a stroller. Like, that's a big enough that you could probably have some recognition. They're in the backseat of your minivan, and there's a shark in a bucket. Like, I don't know what the protocol is with that. Like, that's way weirder than, like, hey, we got a puppy. Yeah, we got a shark.
In other pet news, a Wisconsin man has lost both of his legs due to a virulent infection after being licked by a dog. According to local reports, earlier this summer, Greg Mantufel contracted capnocytophaga canamorsis, a bacteria found in dog saliva that can cause sepsis, his family says. In just a few days, the bacteria spread and Mantufel was fighting for his life. This bacteria causes sepsis in Greg's body that has completely changed not only Greg's life, but his entire family's as well. Within days of being admitted to the hospital while still fighting for his life, Greg first lost both feet. After a second surgery to remove more damage on his legs, they amputated through both kneecaps.
Wow. That's. I hope they at least gave the bone to a dog or something.
Doctors would eventually be forced to remove parts of Mantufel's lower legs and nose as well. The infection likely entered Mantufel's body from the lick of a dog, probably his own. Dr. Sylvia Munoz-Price, an infectious disease specialist, told...
He better hope it came from his own dog. Otherwise, he's got some explaining to do.
He was cheating on his dog with another dog. Told the news station the infection got into his blood and triggered a very severe response in his body. His blood pressure dropped and the circulation in his limbs declined.
Imagine going through life telling people that you lost, that you had to get your legs amputated because you got a dog STD.
This sounds really weird.
This sounds like a problem like that doesn't happen in real countries. Like that you have to be like in a real poor. Where is this from? Like India or something? It feels like India.
This is from a place called Wisconsin.
Oh, fuck me. Wow. Mike has been exposed as ignorant. Well done, world. All right. Fuck you, Wisconsin, you cheese-eating motherfucker.
There is a GoFundMe for him. He's trying to get $100,000 last.
For what? A new dog?
For a new nose and legs.
Well, I mean, you might as well get a dog. Again, dog STD took your legs. Not a good look. That's a tough one to explain on Tinder. Swipe right if you're into the Crypt Keeper.
Dr. Bruce Farber, Chief Infectious Diseases at North Shore University Hospital in New Hyde Park, told CBS News, "This is an organism carried in the mouths of dogs, and it causes a very bad sepsis infection, but it's usually in people who are immunocompromised and usually follows a dog bite, but this is because it was a lick." He said, either way, it's very uncommon. I've probably seen 2 cases in 30 years of doing infectious disease.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good to know. Although, I mean, does this guy have AIDS then? Is that what this is? Did this doctor just basically tell the world, like, look, the guy's got AIDS, all right? Like, that's how come he's got the virus. If he didn't have AIDS, he wouldn't have the virus. That's how it works. I don't want to say he's got AIDS because I can't say that, but this man's got AIDS, no legs, no nose, and he got an STD of AIDS from a dog. All right? Like, he's not a catch. I wouldn't go near him.
The CDC says people with the following conditions are at greater risk of capnocytophaga infection. This could be trouble for you, Mike. Excessive alcohol use, not having a spleen, immunocompromising conditions, including but not limited to cancer, diabetes, HIV infection, and taking drugs toxic to cells such as chemotherapy.
I mean, I'll have you know, I don't identify with any of those except for maybe the chemotherapy one. But that's just because I get bored on Fridays and it puts me to sleep.
It does take a lot out of you.
Yeah, it does. Now you have like 18 hours, man. You sleep like a champ after that shit. Kills your appetite, though.
In other news, a 25-year-old Delaware man, has been charged with assaulting an elderly Catholic priest, including dousing him with wine and hitting him on the head with the bottle, police said. Newcastle County Police charged Joshua August with assault, resisting arrest, and criminal mischief after the attack Monday at Resurrection Parish Church. Parish employees heard noises and found a man punching and kicking the Reverend William Graney in his office, the police department said in a statement. Witnesses told police that the man went into another room and returned with a bottle of wine, which he poured over the priest. He then hit Graney with the bottle and sprayed canned compressed air into the priest's mouth.
What? What the fuck? This is like some sort of like comedy, like loser guys is running around like, I gotta do something. I gotta pour the wine on your ass. And he throws it and he's got like an air horn. I don't know why the priest has an air horn or compressed air at all, but good for him. It could be worse. He could have like thrown the Holy Host and Eucharist in his mouth and said, "Body of Christ."
It sounds like Austin beating up Vince McMahon in the hospital room where he hits him with the bedpan and shoves the catheter up his ass or whatever. Just grab whatever you can find and hit the priest with it.
I'm wondering if I'm really waiting for the ball to drop when this one was revealed. As the man did all this, he was yelling, "This is for raping me as a child."
Well, like that's what you would presume.
Yeah.
Employees lured August outside and then locked him out. August, who was seen leaving the area on a skateboard, was taken into custody by police after a brief struggle. August was being held on $52,500 secured bail. A preliminary hearing is scheduled for August 7th. Police say Graney was hospitalized but in stable condition.
I mean, not everybody enjoys when they have the second
collection on Sundays for the homeless. Some people do get upset. They're asking for money a second go around. It's like, I already gave my $5. Don't pass a basket around again. The joke works if you know anything about church. So it's completely over your head.
No, I know the church begs for money when you go.
Yeah, I've seen that.
I
guess that is the one thing that they always make sure to highlight on television, isn't it? Nobody ever has a moment in the movie where we all listen to the pastor drone on for 10 minutes about three sentences in the fucking Bible. No. Just the action parts. That's all anybody cares about is the action.
McDonald's accidentally served pregnant woman cleaning fluid instead of latte. A woman who is 32 weeks pregnant with her third child ordered a latte from a Canadian McDonald's, but was instead served cleaning fluid in a cup. Sarah Douglas said she stopped by McDonald's drive-thru in Lethbridge, Alberta, while driving her son to a baseball tournament on Sunday. She said she ordered a latte and continued on her way until taking a sip. I immediately had to put my hazard lights on and pull over and spit it out and rinse my mouth out.
McDonald's immediately apologized and informed everybody that it was an accident. It would never happen again. They have fired the person responsible for buying cleaning supplies for McDonald's. I don't know. They didn't know what they were there for in the first place. They never should have been allowed there. They were just going to get put in the coffee. Nobody expects the help to be able to know what goes in the coffee cup or not. They saw liquid. They just put it in there. And look, what's the lady going to get? $5. We gave you a new cup of coffee and maybe a gift certificate or something like that. Yeah, she didn't die or anything.
Well, remember that story about, it was probably at least 15 years ago, where the person spilled the hot coffee on.
Yeah.
And that, didn't they get like millions of dollars?
$400,000.
Oh, was that it?
I think it was $400,000. I think at the end, I think it all came down on appeal and stuff like that. Like, it wasn't like.
Have we talked about that before?
Yeah, I think so. There's way more to the story than obviously was
right. But they had the coffee like cranked up super high. Like, they were kind of sort of negligent, right?
Yeah, there was something weird about it. It was like, it wasn't just like hot coffee. It was kind of one of those things where like you go, oh, okay, like, yeah, all right. Like, it's not like it's the difference between like slapping your wife and punching her with a closed fist.
The mother said she took the lid off and was hit by the pungent smell of chemicals. She turned around and drove back to the McDonald's, where she received the latte to speak to a supervisor. I showed him the coffee and he had asked if I wanted a new one. And I said, absolutely not. This is unacceptable. I said, I need to speak to someone higher up. And he said he was the only supervisor on at the time, and he gave me his manager's phone number. A worker then told Douglas cleaning lines were attached to the coffee machine and went to fetch the bottle of cleaning solution that was hooked up to the machine at the time. I took a picture of it so I knew what I was working with, what I had consumed, so I could talk to 811 and poison control, Douglas said. The bottle of cleaning solution, which Douglas photographed, carried warnings reading, causes serious eye irritation and may cause an allergic skin reaction, and also keep out of reach of children, wear protective gloves and eye protection.
I didn't hear anything about do not consume.
Yeah,
probably just to keep it out of your eyes. You should keep coffee out of your eyes also,
and your fingers.
Yeah, I wouldn't want coffee under my fingers. I wouldn't want Tabasco sauce in my fingers under my fingernails. That would hurt.
The other day I was cutting peppers, and I didn't realize how like spicy this particular pepper I got.
It was
a poblano. And I totally forgot, and I went to take my contacts out at the end of the night. I washed my hands really good, and like it was like crippling. Like I was like down on my knees. Like it was so painful. So I took my contacts out. I put them in whatever the solution. I'm like, eh, it'll probably rinse and be fine in the morning. Like I washed my hands good more, and I took a shower and scrubbed my hands and everything. But there still must have been a little of the oil from like the inside of the pepper on my contacts. So, and I wasn't really thinking about it, and I went to put it back in, and the same thing happened to me again. I had to like tear it out of my eye. Like I was writhing around on the ground. It was awesome.
The kids like walk in and they're like, what's wrong, Daddy? And you're like trying to keep your, like, Daddy just has a thing in his eye. It's okay, kid. Like, you're in so much pain, but like, it's not like a big deal. It's not something to emotionally scar a child by crying in front of them. On the other hand, you are about to rip your eyeball out and hope somebody cuts your nuts off, because that would be a more pleasant experience.
That leads me to my next story.
Uh-oh.
A Minnesota teen allegedly ripped out a relative's eyes from the socket with his bare hands in a grisly assault, according to officials.
I was going to say Somalian. Minnesota. Somali immigrants in the Twin Cities.
Mahad Aziz, 18, is accused of completely gouging out the 74-year-old man's eyes, which have not been found since the Friday afternoon attack in Rochester. You lose your eyes, there's no replacement, Police Captain John Sherwin told news station KTTC. Obviously, this is an injury that is going to change this man's life. Officials said they arrived at the gruesome scene to find the victim missing most of his teeth and both eyes.
Okay, you like, you don't have to know that it's the Somalians. Minnesota has a big, like, just tons of Somali immigrants for some reason. But come on. Nobody from Minnesota rips out someone's eyes. It's Minnesota. You know, like, you have to come to Minnesota to rip out eyeballs. Now, like, they'll rip out the eyes of a fish or something, but not of a person.
Authorities said they haven't determined a motive for the assault. Aziz, not Ansari, by the way. Aziz reportedly refused to answer questions at the scene. There are a lot of things that we don't know, mainly due to the circumstances of the assault. Aziz was brought to a local hospital for mental evaluation, then was booked at Olmsted County Adult Detention Center. The teen faces first-degree assault charges.
I think we could agree that knowing you have a constitutional right to remain silent and understanding that concept and exercising it shows some degree of intelligence, some degree of forethought. Like, hey, I shouldn't, like, confess to murder. Like, that's a bad idea. So, like, I don't know how somebody that can, like, no, don't talk to the cops, doesn't know, don't rip out eyeballs. It just doesn't make sense. Like, you would think that, like, before you get to the part where, like, you learn the lesson of, and don't talk to the cops if you did something wrong, because it could come back to haunt you. You never really know. Even innocent people go to jail. Like, that's kind of complex. You have to, like, you have to have mastered don't rip out eyeballs before you can get to appreciate exercise constitutional right to remain silent.
I can't imagine.
It's just horrible. It's awful. It's insane.
Well, it's also the guy's so old. Like, the whole thing is
good. We are lucky. And, like, I think that it's, and when I say immigrant, it's just because it's poor people in general. Like, poor people just cause violence, and it's not their fault. They're poor, whatever, fine. Like, in America, like, our poor people have guns or whatever. Like, these poor people come from countries that they don't have that, so they have to, like, get creative. And so they come up with rip the eyeball out. Like, we used to eye gouge in, like, the 1800s in America. There's a huge eye gouging problem. They're just kind of a little bit behind, and they'll catch up. And you give it time, and all of those African immigrants are going to start having guns. And I guess they already do. See, they're making their way.
Did you listen to that Rogan podcast with that
the guy that got kidnapped?
Yeah.
That was so weird, because, like, the whole thing was like an hour and a half, and it wasn't super in depth, but at the same time, it was just an hour and a half of Rogan sitting there going, what was that like? Like, you're one of only, like, three people in the world that knows this experience. And then this guy just going, it was everything as horrible as you'd imagine, and then some. It's like, oh shit. There's no heroin. There's none of this, like, bravery. It was just this guy being like, and then I broke. And then a couple weeks later, I broke again. I didn't even know I could break again. It's just like, oh boy, this is miserable.
Well, one part that caught my attention was they were talking about, like, the pirate towns in Somalia.
Yeah.
There's, like, no government, and the government won't go in there because it's too dangerous. Like, I'm like, that is so foreign to me. Like, we complain about there's too much government and bureaucracy and all this shit. I'd much rather have that than fucking pirate towns. Like, there'd be pirate towns around here. You know what I mean? Like, all along the coast of America. Like, can you imagine that shit? Like, you got to drive 50 miles out into the middle of the country to avoid this pirate town if you want to go anywhere. Like, holy shit. Like, it's fucking 2018. Everybody's got a computer cell phone in their pocket walking around, not paying attention, and are bitching about the Wi-Fi not being good. There's fucking pirate towns on the other side of the world. Like, we suck. We're not the best people.
My biggest, probably the biggest amount of stress I feel during the day is figuring out, am I going to catch the 509 train or the 542 train? and trying to figure out which one am I going to do and when do I need to leave. Meanwhile, these people are pirates and they run towns.
Right, and probably... your shitty government, your government sucks to begin with. Everyone's poor. There's not enough food. You live in a shitty desert. And then on top of it, there's towns that are way worse that have their own fucked up government that there's just pirates running around. It's fucking, it's wild. Like, you don't think about it enough because you're sheltered and you live your own life. And I'm never going, I'll never see that part of the world in my life, nor do I have much desire to, but there's like millions of people, probably a billion people living like that. It's crazy. Although,
here's the thing, though, in fairness, like that's a level of like, so I don't know how you get there because, like, in the Western world, like, even in Asia and all that, like, they've basically had the rule of law for thousands of years. Like, yeah. They don't have the rule of law. They could, like, yeah. We've had our frontier lands and things like this, but we never would have allowed a pirate town to exist in America. That's why, honestly, that's why some of these, like, sanctuary cities, yeah, they're pirate towns. They're avoiding the law, and it's, you know, you start with one law, and the next thing you know, pirates. Also, I had a joke. What the fuck was it? Damn it, I lost it. It doesn't matter.
On the topic of law, you've spent some time in courtrooms. Judge orders chatty convict's mouth tape shut during sentencing. In Cuyahoga County, Judge John Russo instructed a crook's mouth be shut using a strip of red duct tape when the talkative thief wouldn't stop interrupting his own lawyers during his Monday sentencing hearing. Video posted by the outlet shows Franklin Williams prattling on as the judge issues multiple strict warnings. At this point, I'm going to hear from your lawyers, and that means zip it, the judge says as Williams continues to talk back. If we have to, I will gag you in 1 second, Russo adds sternly. Zip it until I give you a chance to talk. Even after a sheriff's deputy covered his mouth with tape, Williams, 32, kept speaking, saying it is what it is through the gag. Eventually, the verbose convict got slapped with 24 years in prison.
Well, I guess if you get that point, I mean, really, you might as well talk shit to the judge. You're going to get 24 years. What's he going to do? Give you 25? Ooh.
Can the judge tape his mouth shut?
Yeah. I mean, wow. He could look, he could impose order however he wants his courtroom. If it's that, you could argue it's cruel and unusual or like,
have you ever heard of this? Like there's a picture of him with like the tape. There's like video of it.
I'm sure it's the, I know this happens, you know, to judges because it just does. I mean, I see this shit. A lot of times the judges will yell. Most of the time they try to remove people. But I guess in this case, it's Ohio, right? I mean, what are you going to do? They barely have the rule of law there.
What is it, like contempt of court or something? Like there's certain ways you got to behave when you're in there?
Say that again.
Is it contempt of court? What is that?
Yeah, that'd be contempt, yeah.
Right.
Contempt of court is just not listening to the judge. Okay. It's just a fancy way of saying, shut up. Do what you're told.
In December, Williams was convicted of aggravated robbery, kidnapping, theft, misuse of credit cards, and other charges. His trial, which began late last year, hit a snag when he snipped off his ankle bracelet and fled to Nebraska. He claimed he had been hit over the head and had lost his memory. But in court last Tuesday, prosecutors played phone calls to his family, proving he did remember the charges he was facing. He'd also used his phone to research how to beat criminal charges.
Good for him. I bet every single human being on the planet, if they're in his situation and they had a cell phone, would be Googling how to get out of this. Like, of course you're going to Google it. Of course you are. You'd be an idiot if you didn't Google it. You know you don't know the answer, so the internet might know the answer. You can find how to build a nuclear bomb on the internet. You should be able to figure out how to get out of jail.
In other police and jail news, in Abilene, Texas, a West Texas sheriff's deputy has been fired after video showed him driving down a Texas highway with an inmate sitting on his roof. The deputy had been transporting 31-year-old Martin Gregory Estrada. The man broke a patrol car window and climbed onto the vehicle's roof. The deputy summoned help and didn't stop until backup arrived. A Taylor County Sheriff's Office spokesman says the deputy was terminated for violating police policies on inmate safety and security.
Wait, really? He got fired? Like, he didn't do anything wrong? I mean, obviously somebody fucked up when the inmate gets out, but I presume that there was something weird. I don't know. Yeah, I guess if you're driving a cop car and the guy gets out and gets on top of the roof, you probably get fired.
I think it was more the issue that he had a human being on his roof sitting Indian style and was driving down the highway with him. Like, I think he breaks the window, climbs on top while the car is moving, and the idea is you're supposed to stop because you can fall off the roof and die.